We will be having a public hearing on House Bill 5031. I'd like to call Mr. Nichol and Ms. Ann Kelly Seal to the dais. Probably before you do that, as a way of introduction, I wrote some comments down because I want to be very, very clear in my role and responsibility as a subcommittee chair. Yesterday we heard testimony from Mr. Tyrone Waters concerning his time as a patient in the Oregon State Hospital. Needless to say, that was very, very disturbing news to me. As most of you know, Mr. Waters is the son of my colleague and my friend over the years, Senator A.L. Gordley. But even more than that, he's a constituent of mine himself. So what I have done is to ask Mr. Britton to draft a letter to the governor asking him to investigate Mr. Waters' allegations thoroughly and to take necessary corrective actions. And I appreciate the committee yesterday being a part of that. So John drafted the letter, and the co-chairs will review that letter this afternoon. I also spoke with Dr. Bruce Goldberg this morning. He told me that he had requested staff in the DHS Office of Investigation to review any prior investigations and actions. That was very important to me, that we would know the actions that were taken for correctiveness. And to open a new investigation of any additional allegations, and he assured me he would do everything he could to make sure the inquiry was thorough and complete. I want you to know that I take Mr. Waters, and I call him very fondly, Tyrone, as I know you do, so, and we want, all of us want, I believe, patients at the Oregon State Hospital to be safe and to be treated with dignity and with respect. And we'll do all that we can to make sure that that happens. And so in that vein, Dr. Goldberg has responded. He'll be responding via a letter by Dr. Nichol, and the governor's office will be responding to Ms. Erin Kelly Seal. Before you start, any comments from the committee, or would you rather...
Madam Chair, thank you. Just thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Ms. Kelly Seal.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Erin Kelly Seal, the Governor's Human Services Advisor, and I just am simply here to echo the Governor's commitment that every patient in the state's care at the hospital be treated in a dignified way, and to let you know that we take very, very seriously any allegation by an individual being served at the hospital of abuse or improper treatment. And so our commitment to you is to stay closely connected to the review that the Department of Human Services is doing to thoroughly review that information ourselves, and to also, in addition to reviewing what has been, with respect to the allegations that were laid out before you, we also want to be sure that we are reviewing what has taken place in response and what should be taking place, and we'll present a report to you as well about ideas that we have with respect to our findings and any recommendations going forward to make sure that as we consider the services that are being delivered there, and as we consider the commitment that I think many of us have made to a new state hospital system and to transforming our public mental health system service delivery, that we apply lessons learned and that we go forward in a way that we can all be proud of and stand up together and really feel confident about what we're doing at our state hospital and in our community service delivery system. And so we take this very seriously, and it's our commitment to you to be involved and to report back. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Dr.
Nichol. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Nichol, I'm Assistant Director for...
And while you're doing that, I've asked Mr. Britton to give you a copy of the letter that Dr. Nichol is about to read to you.
I'm responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. Dr. Goldberg requested, with your permission, I'll read the letter aloud into the record that he provided you, Madam Chair, just a little while ago. Dear Senator Carter, I appreciate your sincere interest in the quality of care our patients receive at the Oregon State Hospital. I take seriously, as does the leadership of the hospital, the right of every patient to receive appropriate treatment in a dignified manner. After reviewing the testimony of Mr. Waters before the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services yesterday, I share your concerns about his allegations of mistreatment. The hospital leadership and I take all such allegations of abuse, whether verbal or physical, very seriously. When these types of allegations are made, the Department of Human Services Office of Investigations conducts a review of the charges to determine if they are founded and, if so, whether disciplinary or legal actions are required. Based on information I received this morning, of the incidents Mr. Waters mentioned, 10 have been previously investigated. In addition, the most recent incident mentioned is currently under investigation. I've asked for a full report from the Office of Investigations of previous allegations by Mr. Waters, including copies of past records, so that I can review the charges as well as the results of earlier investigations. Once I have reviewed the records and have time to review them, I will schedule a meeting with you to report the results and propose the next steps. I welcome your continued interest in the situation. We'll work closely with you to see that it is resolved to everyone's satisfaction. Sincerely, Bruce Goldberg, MD, Director.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Representative Blood.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for not only expediting getting that letter out, but to Bob for getting back to us as quickly as he did. We appreciate that very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
There you go.
Madam Chair, I'll continue now with our budget presentation, and today's primary topic is community mental health programs. I have asked, I'd asked three people to provide a short panel again today. The title is Community Mental Health Services, and I had asked a young doctor who actually grew up in Tillamook, who's now working for Norwood Knight Richardson at Oregon Health and Sciences University, to be here. Because of the change in schedule, he wasn't able to be here, but he's a psychiatrist who's working in community corrections and would have been able to provide the committee with some firsthand knowledge and experience and observations on people with major mental illnesses who are ending up in our criminal justice system. Unfortunately, he couldn't change his schedule today because of his commitments, and so I will talk with Dr. Belinsky and see if he's able to provide some written testimony if the committee would be interested in seeing that. What I would propose is that we take the next 10 minutes or so and have the two people who are able to be here come up, and their names are Nancy Franz-Gannis. Nancy is our Director of Nursing Services at Oregon State Hospital, was appointed in the last year or so, and has done a dynamic job of leadership. And the other person is a friend and colleague of mine, Joe Thurman, who's also a registered nurse, psychiatric nurse, has worked for many years at Oregon State Hospital, and before that had experience working in the community mental health system. Joe is a union leader, and he and I and others have really developed a dialogue over the last couple of years that I think has been helpful in not in solving all problems between management and labor, but really opening up a different kind of dialogue. So I've asked Joe to join us too. So if you would come up,
I would appreciate it.
What I'd like to do is to have each of you take 5 minutes, and Doctor, you can coordinate that, but we have a lot to still do, and performance measures and that kind of stuff, so and your pop packages as well. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Franz-Gettis, and I'm the Director of Nursing Services for the Oregon State Hospital. And Bob has asked me to spend just a little bit of time letting you know about the role of psychiatric and mental health nurses and the status of nurses within our hospital. So I've provided you a document. I'm going to probably read a little bit, be a little bit spontaneous as well. Psychiatric and mental health nurses work with individuals and families and communities and assess mental health needs, develop diagnoses, plan, implement, and evaluate nursing care. We use interventions that promote and foster health, assess dysfunction, assist clients to regain or improve their coping abilities, and we attempt to prevent further disability. We work in an environment that we try to make therapeutic. We assist clients with self-care activities, administer and monitor medications. We use treatment regimens, health teaching, including mental illness and coping skills education, crisis intervention, counseling, and case management. If we were to look at a textbook for nurses, we have to apply biologic and psychological therapies, and we have to have a good overview of mental illness, substance abuse, dual diagnosis, cares of populations at risk, community milieu as a therapeutic modality, cultural and spiritual implications of nursing care, and we also look at family dynamics in mental health and illness. The bottom line is psychiatric nursing services practices involve the science of psychiatry and the use of ourselves as the art, and it can be an incredibly fulfilling career as a nurse. Beyond the nursing textbook, while nurses at Oregon State Hospital exemplify these constructs, we work every day in a century-old facility with less than half the staff we need, spending endless hours completing manual paperwork, stocking the medication cart pill by pill for each individual patient for the full 24-hour day. We transport patients to appointments. We prepare and serve 3 meals and 3 snacks a day. We clean, we stock, we inventory supplies by hand, we respond to crisis, and we provide direct assistance for patients' daily care needs on units that have a census of up to 43. And I have to say that most nurses went to school to have a more expansive role than that. When we are looking at recruitment and retention for the outlook for our future, right now the Oregon State Hospital employs 186 nurses, and that would be RNs, LPNs, and nurse practitioners. We have 42 vacancies in our current 228 budgeted FTE positions, which equal about an 18% vacancy rate at the hospital. The average years of services that our nurses have at the hospital is 9.7 years, and our average age is 50. So retirement looms on the horizon.
Excuse me.
Yes.
50. Just bring that.
50. That's the average age right now. To staff our current census of nearly 700 at 697 today, and to meet federal guidelines on staff-to-patient ratios, including the percentages of RNs available for care, we need approximately 450 nurses. That's 264 more than we currently have. Oregon State Hospital is challenged to recruit RNs even to fill those 42 nursing vacancies. We simply cannot compete with salaries, flexible scheduling, differentials, or incentives offered in the community. To meet our minimum standards for staffing, we have had to supplement with $4.8 million of contract agency nurses, and yet we continue to have to mandate our own nurses for overtime. Oregon State Hospital is further challenged to retain nurses and attract new nurses in an environment that severely lacks resources in the form of support services, technologies, modern facilities, and the community support that would be needed to manage our ever-rising census. It's our hope that a fully realized new hospital will attract and retain nurses and allow those nurses to flourish in their practice, because most nurses, particularly in the psychiatric mental health setting, want to make a difference. That's why we go into this field. Satisfied, supported, hope-filled mental health nurses in sufficient numbers are vital to patient care improvement outcomes. If we had proper technology and assistance, we could measure the impact of nurse staffing by being able to analyze data and establish some outcome measures in the form of nursing-sensitive quality indicators like patients' decreased length of stay, decreased episodes of violence, increased patient satisfaction, medication rate reductions, and decreased readmission rates that might be directly related to community skills development needs and symptom management issues. Nursing staff make an important difference in all of these domains, every shift, every day, but we desire to do even more. We are asking you to please consider fully supporting our new hospital. Our patients' effective recovery and eventual community successes will be the ultimate return on your investment, measured in eventual financial savings, but more importantly, measured in terms of enhancing human potential. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you. I guess I don't understand the having the contract to the tune of $4.8 million in contracts of contract agents and nurses. You have 42 nurses. No, how many nurses did you say you have?
186.
But it seems to me we're paying a premium price to an agency for contract nurses rather than hiring them. And so what's the problem in hiring rather than going out to a contract agency? What's the administrative cost of the agency? And what's the is the pay scale the same, or are those contract people getting more? Are we prohibited from offering more money to... I don't understand why we don't use that $4.8 million. Could you explain that, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, that's a very, very good question. Our average contract agency nurse salary ranges between, I just saw this figure recently, between $51 and $62 per hour for contract agency nurses. If we took a median range of RNs that are in the median range of salary, including 30% benefits on top of that, for our hospital, it would be about $35 per hour. Nurses make, without benefits, an average of $26 per hour. To answer the question about agency costs, that's answering agency costs. Why we use agency is because we cannot compete with the salary ranges to attract nurses to come in, nor do we have the differentials. Shift differential, for example, working weekends, working swing shift, working night shift, we are out of competition between $3 and $4 per hour for differential. Our night shift differential is somewhere around $1.30 an hour for RNs. So it's very, very difficult to attract folks. If you were to take that $4.8 million, and I've done some work in this area, it equates about 57 nurses that we could hire at current salary rates.
One more question. Yeah. So how many nurses do we contract for then for that $4.7 million?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, that's a little bit difficult. I can tell you more in shifts than in FTEs because they're not person for person. So we staff not only for the vacancies that exists, but we also have people, units who, and remember the state hospital was created by budgeted FTE. It had nothing to do with how many patients are on a unit or how acute the unit's census needs are. We don't staff that way. We got staffed with budgeted FTE. So, for example, some units only have enough RN staffing to cover the very minimum 7 days a week, three shifts a day. So if anyone is sick or takes vacation or comp time, then we have to substitute either by floating nurses or if we have enough vacancies by utilizing agency contract nurses.
Madam Chair, one more question. The contract nurses work side by side with the regular employed nurses, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, yes, they do.
And there is a huge wage, there is a wage and benefit differential.
Yes, that is correct. And I would say that most nurses at the hospital would say to you that the agency nurses do not perform the same skill set on a shift as a staff nurse would.
Do you lose people from the staff who transfer to the agency?
Occasionally we do.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Representative Kotek, Senator Winters, and Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a follow-up to the Senator's question. So could you give us the dollar amount difference to hire, to meet your minimum staffing needs if you were hiring your nurses, what that amount would be versus the 4.8? I heard that we could hire 57 for that amount, but
Do we need 57, and can I just make that assumption? I'm just wondering what the difference is in what we're spending and what, if we just had people on staff, we'd be spending.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, it would be actually more than 57. We would need more than 57 nurses because our budgeted FTEs don't meet the treatment needs on the units. So, and I can't tell you what that equates financially, how that number would play itself out.
Can I follow up? Thank you. So the $4.8 million is getting to your minimum staffing needs, though?
That is correct.
Okay.
And that does not include the mandatory overtime hours that nurses also have to, our staff nurses sometimes are mandated for overtime hours. Thank you.
I think I'm going to hop in here.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to just put this in context. What you're getting is a good glimpse into not only the deterioration of the physical structure of the state hospital, but for a long time we've ignored these kind of problems with staffing levels, nursing salaries. This is part of a much bigger picture too, because as you all are aware, nursing nationally is at a crisis point. Nurses generally are on average older and older. Not enough young people are going into it, and only less than 10%, I think it's between 3% and 6% of nurses go into psychiatric nursing. So we have a huge issue here that you're getting a good glimpse into, and I appreciate that Nancy has been able to describe that. Joe will describe that in a little bit from the direct service level, but I think that this is a picture that we'll be talking about more as we move toward the new state hospital. The staffing increases are going to be driven, I hope, by a couple of things. One is good common sense about what an adequate staffing level will be as we move toward a new state hospital system. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on what side you look at this, the civil rights investigation that's going on now will probably have something to say about all this in terms of minimum staffing requirements. We're trying to think these things through ahead of time, and that's why I think it's important for the committee to hear a glimpse into this now so that this doesn't all surprise us later on.
Exactly. Senator Winters, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just about, it would be helpful for presenters when you raise an issue like that, like this one, particularly when you're talking about the dollars that you're spending for your contracted nurses versus the nurses that are at the facility. But if you give us actually a breakout, it's raising a lot of questions both in my mind as well as the senator, as well as the rep, as to what could we be purchasing with that 4.8 plus. It also gives us a true picture of what's happening at the facility. And we deal in kind of absolute numbers, not very good at summarization, so that's one thing to be helpful. My second question is, because you offered in your testimony, you talked about the cultural environment. Can you give me a sense of your nurses and what the ethnic breakout is for your nurses? That's very helpful when we're talking about in mental health. There used to be a time when, I know in African American communities, we were very reluctant to say that we even had mental issues, let alone to be at the state hospital. Mm-hmm. And so that is no longer, one of our issues. So I would like to know, what the staffing breakouts are, Bob, and what are we doing to bring about cultural competency inside the institution?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, we'd be happy to get that information for you, along with some more detailed information about what we can buy with the $4.8 million if we could hire nurses. The problem, of course, as Nancy has described it, is that with the salary schedule that we have available to us, at any price, we can't hire nurses under the state's system, and we have to staff the hospital with nurses. So we're caught in this kind of catch-22, as you understand.
For us, Bob, it would be helpful if we knew, specifically
what your obstacle is. And if the obstacle is really because from an HR standpoint, we don't have the right levels, that's one issue. If the issue is that we don't have the dollars, that's another issue. But for us sitting here, I think we need to know the specifics where your obstacle exists. And I know Joe's anxious to weigh in.
Well, I've been doing some research on this, and I've got to tell you that my name is Joe Thurman. I'm a registered nurse at Oregon State Hospital. I'm also president of the nursing union at the state hospital. And currently, our top of our nursing scale is the bottom of several hospitals around state. So we top out, and we're still below all the private sector hospitals around the state, regardless of what the benefit packages are. And I've compared us with OHSU, Sacred Heart down in Eugene. I've compared us with California, Washington, Nevada, and we are below what they are paying out there. And our workloads are such, and I broke down, I've got some handouts for you guys of what I do in a day. I've got 4 staff, 1 nurse, and 43 patients. As a psychiatric nurse, I want to do good care. I want to do groups. I want to do teachings. I want to do those things. I don't have the time. I'm doing good to keep my patients well and safe on the unit. And that is all due to it's really hard to attract new people into this profession. Most of us have been older, and we've been in this profession for a number of years, so we tend to stay there. I love my job, but I find it very frustrating on days when I don't have enough time to do the interventions that are necessary for my patients. And part of that is we've got to become competitive with the outside world, with the real world out there. We've got to provide a more safe and dignified work environment, as well as a more safe environment for the patients, because everybody suffers in this situation. It's not just the staff. It's the patients, too. When I'm running that, I'm doing work that normally a CNA would do instead of a psychiatric nurse. Psychiatric nurses, if you look around the countries, are the primary caregivers in hospitals. We are the ones that do most of the teachings. We're the ones that get the patients ready for discharge. In my situation, I'm trying to get them into the medical clinic. I'm trying to triage to make sure that they're not in critical care somewhere. I'm trying to make sure that all the blood sugars get done and the injections get done, and I help out with UAs and different things on the board. But really, my time would be better spent with the patients.
In the 1980s, we had a big investigation. Remember this from Bob? You've been on the list going forward. And it took the federal government in the state of Oregon. You've got to do a better job. And maybe for people like me who's been here since the 80s, recognize that we did the bare minimum when the federal government did come in. Oregon just has not looked at this issue. The Oregon legislature has not looked at this as seriously as we should have. We have known over a long enough period of time to try to do something about this issue, but the money just hasn't been there. But being able to take care of your basic infrastructural needs, we need to be thinking of some other kinds of needs, because one morning you're going to wake up and decide, I don't want to be there either. Mm-hmm. Because burnout is an absolute reality, I heard the same message in 1987 when the federal government came in. I was on this committee then. And here it is, what, 87 to 20 years? Wake up.
You're not talking to me, Madam Chair.
No.
Actually, Mr. Thurman launched, this really proves you have some power in mental health, because you actually launched into answering my question before I asked it. So, very impressive. My question was about recruitment, and I certainly would like to know more about to what level does Oregon need to get to recruit on a nationwide basis, because it's apparent we can't compete within our own state.
Well, I think you have to bring up the salaries and benefit packages to be competitive with the private industry before we can even go down that road. And we're so right now that it's just, we're not even close. I mean, to be honest with you. And the new recruits that really want to be in psychiatric nursing, as I recall, Nancy can probably speak more to this, that they're going to drop the curriculum out of the nursing programs around the state. The rotations through clinical at the psychiatric hospitals is going to be dropped. So that's going to make it even more pressing to try to get nurses into this profession. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marsha.
And it's too bad the governor's staff isn't here, and you're listening out there somewhere. I think it's an absolute shame and crime that we're not training more nurses. There's a nursing shortage, and there are people that are lined up waiting to become nurses. It isn't that people don't want to become nurses, that we don't have adequate training in the state of Oregon or other places. Now, I wasn't aware of the psychiatric courses being dropped, but I think we have to get the message out to the governor's office and to us that we have to put more money into. It's an economic development issue in many ways because nursing pays a family wage job, and there are people who want to become nurses. There are people retiring, and there are people who want to get out of the hospital setting and work in doctor's offices and work in other kinds of nursing situations, but I think it's ridiculous that we don't have enough nurses because people are lined up to become nurses.
Senator Wardley.
I'll go after Senator Wardley.
I'd have to echo. Some of us have been screaming about the need to enlarge our nursing pools for a number of years now. But I want to reiterate what I said before when you come, because if you don't tell us specifically what it is you need, then we do not know how to honor, nor do we have the ability to talk to the general public about the needs and wants. And when you talk in terms of needs, comparing our wage structure with California, Washington, and other places is a good place to go, because we do look to what our neighboring states are paying and what's going on, and why we don't, why we're losing nurses and other staff. So I would just encourage you that when you come before us, that you be as clear and concise and provide us with as much comparative information as possible. Some of us, our hearts are there at the state hospital, have been for a long time, and but you can make our job a lot easier on this side of the podium if you give us the kinds of information that we can then use.
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Nichol?
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, about 6 months ago I kind of woke up with a bad dream about all of this. And particularly as we were beginning, it was after the budget preparation process, so it explains partly why we didn't get it in for this session to look at. But I realized that if we're going to be moving toward a new state hospital, we can't staff it in the same way that we've been doing. We have to rethink a lot of this. So we formed a group that's met a number of times now. We're about to issue at least a preliminary report with this whole set of recommendations about how to begin to address the psychiatric nurse shortage issue. And not just a bellyache about what the problem is, but begin to propose solutions. It's going to take creativity, and I can assure you it's going to take more resources than we've been able to put into this now. And I think this discussion is probably a really good prelude to a deeper, richer, and more focused discussion about this, if not sooner, certainly next legislative session.
And I want to apologize to Senator Cordley. I have that data at home because I've been using it. But if I'd have thought I needed it, I would have brought it in. Or Senator Winters, I guess.
The psychiatric nurse shortage report that's due, Dr. Nichol, when can we expect that?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I'm shooting for by the 1st of May. I would like for it to be available during the session so that we can begin to at least look at it.
And then to follow up, the psychiatric nursing program, can you say more about what's being dropped? I want to make sure I understand what we're losing.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we're losing the Oregon Center for Nursing Education, which is called OCNE, is a consortium of the nursing education facilities in the state of Oregon, and they have joined together from my understanding, to create a generalized nursing curriculum. And some of that is aimed at trying to get more nurses in the pipeline more quickly and having curricular standards that are averaged across the state. You may or may not know that several different nursing programs have different entrance criteria, have different lengths of clinical rotations and curricular activities. For some reason, they have determined that in 2009 that there will no longer be a psychiatric and mental health nurse rotation. Currently, Oregon State Hospital participates with 7 different schools of nursing in providing nursing students their psychiatric and mental health nursing. Now, it's not to say psychiatric and mental health nursing will not be addressed in the curriculum, but it's going to be addressed as sort of an integrated portion of every piece of the curriculum as opposed to a specific clinical curriculum, which in my opinion, if I were to look at psychiatric nursing, and I've been at the state hospital for 20 years and I'm still an old dog trying to learn new tricks, I'm not going to burn out because I'm very, very invested in what we do. I would say to you, though, mental health nursing, psychiatric mental health nursing, is just not promoted in schools of nursing. It's just not promoted. They are trying to turn out nurses that can provide medical surgical skills generally because the nursing shortage is so great. The nursing shortage, as well, you probably know the average age of a nursing educator in the state of Oregon is 52, and the requirement for faculty to student ratio is 1 faculty per 9 students. So every time you get a retirement, you lose the ability to have 9 nursing slots. And in limited amount of programs, that's a lot of nurses out of the pipeline. So some of that is the reason why they try to speed up the curriculum, and psychiatric mental health nursing will be dropped as a rotation. We have to make it more attractive, and I fully believe and want to see the hospital in its new form in the next 5 to 7 years, that we could recruit and attract new nurses to work in a facility that was technologically appropriate in an environment that allowed nurses to flourish in their practice, as I said previously. But it's going to take some work, both on our behalf, so psychiatric mental health nursing, to promote that as a career choice for folks. And it's also going to take some resources in order to open up opportunities for those folks.
If I may follow up, Madam Chair.
Yeah, please do.
Thank you. So someone has determined that in 2009 there will no longer be a psychiatric rotation, but where's the pushback? Is anyone saying, this is not acceptable, we've got to keep what we have in place? Where's that conversation taking place?
Madam Chair, Senator Burley, I don't participate in that committee, and so I'm not sure what the nursing education faculty, how they're thinking and how they came to that conclusion, nor do I know what the curriculum looks like. I, being around psychiatric mental health nursing, of course, there's quite a stir for us, and hopefully we can have a cacophony of voices that will raise up and say it's not okay.
I wonder if, knowing that Dr. Knight Richardson is going to be with us tomorrow, I believe, for public testimony, Dr. Knight Richardson from OHSU, I'm wondering if he may have some information. I'm just kind of making a mental note that we may want to pursue the conversation with him and others to find out if there is pushback on that decision that seems to have already been made from your testimony. Thank you.
Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am hoping for the report to be something comprehensive that addresses all of the problems that have been brought out in today's discussion, and in particular by the written and verbal statement we have from the Director of Nursing. But it's not, with all due respects, it's not just about the nurses. When I see the work that the nurses are doing, the hours of manual paperwork, preparing meals, cleaning, stocking and inventorying supplies, I would like to see proposed solutions that are comprehensive, not just how many nurses we need, but what kind of staffing is needed at all the various classification levels, but also I'm concerned a little bit about the organization of the work, and also the ways and means implications of policy decisions that are made on the education end of things, as we think about how much money to invest in community colleges, for example, or universities. To what extent are those decisions driving cost increases or addressing some cost problems that we have in other areas? So I'm not feeling real good right now about making decisions for this biennium without understanding the implications not only on the human services side but in education or workforce development that's happening in some other committee, without understanding how those things are pushing on our costs through this one subcommittee. Actually, may I add one more thing?
Yeah.
The discussion reminds me a little bit of something that we heard in a public safety subcommittee a couple of weeks ago. It was about the inability of small cities to recruit and then retain police officers. They were paying a large amount of money to employ and pay for training for the police officers, only to then not be able to compete with medium and large sized cities in the state of Oregon. So they felt like they were basically underwriting the training and those first few months or year of service in one level of government, you might say, or one area, only to lose the staffing to another area. So even though I know that some of you may think it's a bizarre comparison, I do see a little bit of similarity in understanding where shortages are and how can we fix that problem.
Two things, members. 2 years ago, I went with the governor to Kaiser Permanente Hospital, where other hospitals were there, nursing departments were there. We put together a two-year plan in terms of workforce development. And that bill is in Senator Betsy Johnson's committee now. The rush is on by this state. This state has the message. We cannot get the legislation through Ways and Means. Let's just face it. This is not the first time we've asked for nurses for the hospitals. We, the legislature, have to look at ourselves and stop looking at the governor. We are not helping these people out. And I know you guys just come and say you can't bear the brunt of this like the rest of us can. We just have not done our jobs. How many times, well, I can't put you in the line for that. Over and over again, we've asked for this to happen. Now, let me say to you, there is a workforce initiative piece that's coming through now that is looking at how we bring more nurses into the system and help pay for that piece. And I would like, I don't know the bill number, maybe we can get it, but I am supporting that piece. I'm on the board of workforce development for the state. I would like to see each of you look at that and see how you can help support it, because that's the thing that's going to make this real. You are not wrong, Representative Nathanson. We are just not looking at a holistic view of the infrastructural needs of this state, and certainly having nurses, in addition to psychiatric nurses, being trained and ready to take these people's jobs. The Joes and the Nancy France Geddes is not going to be there another 10 years. You know, they're going to need somebody to replace them. We're the ones. The legislature is the big bad kid on the block here who's not doing the job. Now, how can more of you get in the space where Margaret Carter is in funding these things? That's the issue. So we can't put it all on the governor. The legislature has to take some of its own medicine. Dr. Nichol.
Madam Chair, if I could just go back to one of the comments made by Representative Nathanson, the report is going to be comprehensive in terms of its recommendations. I mean, everything from the need to get more nursing slots, which means more nursing instructors, the differential in pay that sometimes nursing instructors make less by becoming an instructor, to other incentives like loan forgiveness proposals and programs. There will be a variety of things, and I can assure you the report will be comprehensive. Whether everybody will agree with everything, that's a different matter. But we're really trying to brainstorm this in a way that we see the interconnections that you're calling to our attention. So I appreciate your remarks.
Bob Bonanza, either one or any of the three. OHSU has had, and been one of the primary sources when we talk about producing new nurses. Yet that program is just now beginning to rebuild itself. Are there things that, as the chair has pointed out, the legislature can do to help OHSU in this regard, other than the flat answer, give them more money?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Girard, we're probably not the best people to ask what specifically OHSU needs. I think with Dr. Knight Richardson being here tomorrow, it might be an opportunity to pass that message along, and I'm in regular communication with him, and I probably will give him a heads up that that's an issue that you're all very interested in. It relates very germanely to the issues we're bringing before you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's kind of a follow-up to Representative Girard's comment. I haven't had a chance to read the whole site report from the new hospital, but any discussion around co-locating a nursing program in a new facility, so you're training people right on site, whether that's University of Portland, OHSU, pick one, is that part of the discussion?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, that indeed was part of the influence in the choice of Junction City, because it's been announced, I think, now that OHSU is planning to open a second campus down there, where we're assuming that the proximity of those programs will help with placements and with the attraction of people into those kinds of communities and those programs.
I was actually thinking on site. I mean, the Junction City one, I think, makes some sense, but I haven't necessarily heard, does that include nurses? And, you know, there's a difference being in proximity and actually being on site.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I would probably have to defer to Nancy. I'm a social worker, and I don't understand some of that. I can tell you all about social work field placements, but not about the nursing part of it.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I would say that, you know, what goes around comes around, and we had schools of nursing located in hospitals 50 years ago, and that sort of became out of fashion, so to speak, and then they went to university-style settings. And I think it is an option to look at. And even if we may not be able to get up to speed with a four-year program, maybe even an LPN program would be of value in the hospital as a new facility. I think doing it currently in our existing facilities wouldn't be helpful, but I think that might be where we need to go. I think with the health sciences university piece, one of the things that we may be able to do is work on internships for graduating nurses who have an interest in psych to come work at the hospital for a year, have loan forgiveness, take the grad students, take one day a week for clinic or for classroom, 4 days a week for clinical, and that's a model that the East Coast has utilized quite frequently, so that you have a staff base coming from a university setting, which really helps revitalize the current staff and gives you new staff that are able to contribute in ways that perhaps someone who's been there 15 years is not contributing up to speed in that same sort of way. So these are all things to look forward in the future. And I would say to you that as the director of nursing, I've been doing this for about a year, but been at the hospital for 20. And this hospital's administration has really brought light upon the hospital, including Bob Nickel and Bruce Goldberg, Dr. Fickle, and Dr. John Bischoff, who is now our chief psychiatrist. This hospital has been in the dark for so long. So all of these ideas and notions and trying to do business differently and being creative and forward-thinking, it's a very, very exciting time. Despite all our inadequacies, it is a very exciting time to be with the hospital, and I really look forward to doing things differently and making improvements statewide for psychiatric nurses.
Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, since we have left you out, you have 17 minutes.
Okay. 17 minutes?
Uh-huh. Okay. See, I thought you had five, but since they just hogged the whole conversation, I have to give you the rest of the time between now and 2:30.
Well, I don't think I'll take that long unless you have a lot of questions.
We'll give them for the discussion.
I just wanted to say we also need to look at the Department of Corrections for be able to move people out of the state hospital that are not mentally ill and into the Department of Corrections and make some kind of swap. The Department of Corrections right now, as I understand it, is the primary mental health care provider in the state of Oregon. That shouldn't be. It should be a state hospital. But we also get people that are adjudicated from different counties out. We just got a guy the other day. Has no mental illness whatsoever, but some county decided he did, and we've gotten him in. He has no signs and symptoms of mental illness. We need to have some method in place to be able to move him into the Department of Corrections and take the ones out of the Department of Corrections that need to be at the state hospital. They should not be, like I said, the number one mental health care provider in the state. They should be the hospital.
Absolutely.
Joe, who's making those decisions? And where in the chain?
Somewhere at the court system. Now, I have my own ideas, but I don't want to testify to it because they may not be accurate. I'm going on record with that one. I'm not talking private.
So I could ask the phrase the question differently?
Somewhere in the court systems. They're determining that someone is mentally ill. Now, I looked at the records on the individual that we just got in, and the only thing I could see was that he was a major pain to the community. I'm serious. And I'm not lying about that. And they wanted him off the streets for whatever reason, and they adjudicated him, made, you know, said he had a mental illness and sent him to us.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Can you hold just a minute, John?
Bob, it might be instructive if you could describe the process by which a person ends up at the Oregon State Hospital, so the committee is aware of that.
Madam Chair.
We'll go back to you, Representative Gerard.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Gerard, and Mr. Britton. Basically, all admissions to the state hospital are court-ordered. So there are two major types, criminal and civil. The civil commitments are made through a civil process, obviously, and they have to do with people who have not yet committed a crime but are believed to be dangerous to themselves, others, or unable to care for their basic needs because of a mental illness. And there's a, you know, the whole civil commitment process is wrapped up there. I think what Joe is talking about is more the criminal court commitment process, and that's obviously the other way. And there are two types of admissions there. The type of admission that, again, the court orders because they believe that the person is not able to aid and assist in their own defense. So they haven't been adjudicated yet. They're arrested, and they have shown symptoms in the jail or wherever that lead the court to believe that the person really can't have a legitimate trial until they're able to aid and assist with their attorney, etc. So they send those folks to us. They stay about 2 or 3 months, usually on average. The other kind of patient that comes in under a criminal court commitment, and again, it's a court commitment, is when a person has been arrested for a crime and they make the affirmative plea of guilty except for insanity. And then the court makes a decision about whether they come to us or not, having been found guilty except for insanity. Those people can stay with us much longer. In some cases, the sentence requirement means they're going to be under the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board for sometimes 25 and even life, depending on the seriousness of the crime, sometimes less. Then we have them in the hospital until such time as the Psychiatric Security Review Board feels comfortable allowing them to have what's called a conditional release. So there, without getting too much further into it, essentially all of the patients that come to us at the Oregon State Hospital and Blue Mountain Recovery Center are there because the court has ordered them to be there.
So I can, I'm reaching my own conclusion now that because of some of the errors that Joe alluded to, our judges, our judicial system may not be functioning at 100%.
Madam Chair, Representative Gerard, there's at least one bill that I know of this session that's looking at that issue, and I think it's going to have a hearing later this week, or I think it's Friday, that would require a certification of people who do the evaluations so that people are not sent inappropriately to the state hospital. So that there is a piece of legislation that's being considered. I believe it's in the Judiciary Committee.
Yes, thank you.
Everything else Nancy pretty well hit upon. I think that we have to support our nurses at the state hospital. I did type up a thing, if anybody's interested, on how my day actually runs, and then tried to squeeze in how I look at outcomes and stuff on top of that, as you'll see, is next to impossible. Now, I did miss a couple of things on here. Do you guys want me to read it to you into the record?
No, please.
Okay, I want to give you an example of what I do on a typical day. Starting off, I get patient reports from the night shift RN. I start doing blood sugars, injections, one-to-ones with all patients having trouble with their illness. Make sure appointments are on the board. We have a whiteboard out front. Give reports to the MD. Address any medical or dental concerns. Make appointments. Do trip slips. Help transport patients to groups. Attend IDT meetings. Assist ward MD with new orders. Order medications. Do medication reviews. Search patients that return from groups. Meet with patients who are on security hold. Help with UAs, enter new labs, new diet orders, order outside medical consultants, call PT, set up appointments, as well as do monthly notes on patients. I'm also in charge of crisis interventions, medical emergencies, and doing medications. And that doesn't include, and I forgot, discharges, admissions, and transfers.
And how much of that is actually nursing?
See,
and that's my point.
Yeah. And that's the part that's frustrating the psychiatric nurses about. I got into this business because I like to help people. And I want to make a difference in people's lives. And really what I'm doing most of the time is I'm running around helping the ones that are in critical crisis. And the ones that are hibernating in the room because their voices are real bad, I don't have time sometimes.
Right. Senator Bates.
Key question. Patient load.
What's your name?
What is our patient? How many patients are you responsible for with all that work? How many patients do you actually have to do that for?
Well, I have 43 on the unit, and generally there's one RN.
So between two of you, you've got 43 high-intensity patients.
Mm-hmm. And four staff. And one MD.
Senator Winter, what's the national standard?
What's it, 1 to 9?
Senator Bates, Representative Nathan.
Thank you. Am I first?
Uh-huh.
To put that in perspective, if I could, for all of us, when a hospitalist is taking care of patients in a hospital with no significant mental health problems, just making rounds, we think the load they should have is about 15, maybe on a bad day, 16, 17, or 18, and they're pretty pushed to get those people taken care of, make rounds on them, and get through their day. And these are people without significant mental health, drug or alcohol problems. You're doing the same thing in many ways that a hospice is doing, one MD for 43, and a staff below that is less than what we have in the hospitals. So if you kind of put that into your mind and what that would look like, and why I'm not working there as a physician.
I'd be crazy.
You'd soon be one of the patients, you know.
Really, 14 more people than what the national average is.
Yeah.
This question is on a different topic, so please let me know if you'd like it to be asked at a different time. I have a question on policy option package 104-46. Would you like to do that on a different day?
Oh, you can do that. Further questions on this issue? Otherwise, well,
it's on page 43 of it's in the tab State Hospital Services, page 43. The question is about the State Hospital facility and data systems replacement. This is a question either for the panel or for our LFO analyst. It's proposing certificate of participation funding. So I'm wondering what the real costs of this are, because essentially we're borrowing money, right? We're borrowing money to pay for this. So what is the full cost of doing it this way rather than just
binding the money of the bonds that we borrowed? How much we got to pay for this?
Madam Chair, Representative Nathanson, I think I will defer to Mr. Rohr from DAS to answer that question. We've been working on all of this, obviously, and we're planning to present more detail on this on Thursday. I believe we'll need the capital construction budget, but maybe, I don't know, Eric, if you're prepared to just say a little bit about this.
So much more, how much are we borrowing, how much are we paying to borrow it?
I don't have the, I'm sorry, Eric Moore, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. I don't have the specific details in front of me, and obviously the decisions made by the legislative body will dictate the ultimate result. From a construction standpoint, essentially the projected cost based on the two recommendations are around $330 to $350 million for construction. Mm-hmm. If you carry that out, you can at least double that from a debt service standpoint. I mean, so the whole project over the years would be around the $900 million mark, I mean, including the debt service.
Right. I need to clarify what I'm asking about and what I'm asking. In addition to the facilities replacement needs, the current state hospital has antiquated technology. The request will allow for the issue, blah, blah, blah. It needs new technology to meet the business needs of the hospitals. It's wrapped up in this whole package. But how much would it cost to just fix that part of the problem now? I'm concerned. The more we borrow, it's not only what it costs to borrow it this year, but then that's money that perhaps, maybe this is too simplistic a view, but it means it's money that we could have been spending on real services or operations and maintenance in future years, but instead of doing that, we're paying the cost of borrowing money.
Well, actually, that's a political decision, and I won't put that on you, Bob, because that's a legislative decision, but if you want to add something to it.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Nixon, the discussion about the certificates of participation really allows us to include a lot of things that we have been unable to fund otherwise. And so I think the advantage is spreading the payments out over quite a few years rather than having them all lodged in one or two biennia. So I think that's the quick overview. I'd be happy to talk more about that.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, may I ask Representative Nathanson a question? I just want to make sure I understand the question that you're asking. Are you inquiring about whether it would be possible to take care of the antiquated technology portion of this project,
yes,
separate from the other needs?
Yes.
And I think we all need to understand that the hospital itself is antiquated. Well, I'm going to go back to
Madam Chair, Senator Gourley. Yeah, I think investing in the current buildings and the infrastructure there does not make any sense. I mean, that's essentially what the KMD Phase 1 Master Plan report said, is that you're just going to have stranded investments if you try to do these improvements now. We did finally get the hospital wired up to the Internet and connected using some capital construction funds. I believe it's the last biennium. But to go further down that line right now with a lot more investment doesn't seem prudent to
us. There's another piece to this, Madam Chair, if I may follow up. I don't know, Representative Nathanson, have you had the opportunity to visit the state hospital?
I have not been, no.
Okay. For members who have not visited the state hospital, and I'm going to extend that to not just members on this panel, but all 90 legislators, if you see it, then you will better understand that which we are talking about in terms of the need. It can't be fixed. It can't be fixed.
Senator Bates and then Representative Cote.
Yeah, I think that if I understand what this package does, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the beginning of the new hospital. A lot of this money is going to go for engineering, architectural work, and things that need to be done to get us ready to roll. It's not just for rolling out some kind of computer network, but getting things ready for the replacement to take place. And this is part of that package to have that happen. It's a $600,000 package, as I'm reading it here. And my understanding of it earlier was, and this is part of this first step forward to the new facility, as you read it quickly, it might give you the impression that you're buying a bunch of computers that you need to put in there and to take care of some kind of a building problem. This is really about getting the start on the new building, I believe, if I'm reading this correctly. And Senator Gordon is absolutely right. Many of us have been over there several times. It looks like you're back to 1955 with the one floor of the Cuckoo's Nest, except it's gotten worse. And when you walk through those rooms, it makes you think of the movie. That's how antiquated it is.
That's exactly right. Mr. Benton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to note that my understanding of the $600,000 is specifically to begin the development of new technology that would support the operations at the Oregon State Hospital. The remaining amount, and it's about $83 million, give or take, is in the capital construction bill, which I believe is 5006. And on Thursday, there'll be more information about the Oregon State Hospital replacement project. You'll be receiving binders with the Phase 1 and Phase 2 reports, the site report, the siting report, and some other information as well. But the policy option package 10446 has to do specifically with the data systems that will be used to support that new hospital, not specifically the construction. The construction is in the capital construction bill.
Thank you for the clarification. Dr. Nichol, did you have further comments? Okay. We have 2 minutes. Is it less than 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just wanted to thank Mr. Thurman and Ms. France get us for coming here today to testify. I notice we have public testimony tomorrow, and then Thursday is the State Hospital Capitol.
Sure.
So I have two issues about the budget I want to get out. Maybe we can hear back in writing or maybe on Thursday briefly. On page 28 and under Community Mental Health, first bullet there talks about financial assistance agreements with the county governments. Community Mental Health is a pretty large budget. I would like some greater understanding of how we move money down to the counties and what the accountability structures are on those dollars to the counties. So that's my first question. The other one is related to the Children's System Change Initiative. I appreciate the report from May of last year that's in Appendix A. On the last page of that report, on page 14, we talk about next steps in that initiative, and I was wondering if at a future date you can provide in writing where we are in those next steps 1 year later from that report. That would be really helpful.
And I'm sure Representative Kotek will provide some concise information on both of those questions for you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you for a very robust conversation. I can't thank you, Bob, enough for your panelists today, because it certainly gave the committee insight into what is happening and what our infrastructural needs are. And I'd like for all of you to please remember the Workforce Development Initiative that's coming. I need your support on that, because in that piece we'll be talking about more staffing for nursing and other educational programs that we need to build our infrastructure in this state. So thank you very much. Committee dismissed.